It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolfworth, and my guest today is Chancellor Tom Case, who has taken over the helm at the University of Alaska Anchorage. And what an important institution UAA has become in Anchorage. It's right at the center of the city. It's got a part in so many different aspects of our lives. It's where we're located right now here on the campus of APU, which adjoins UAA, part of that UMed district. And many, many big issues. Very fast-growing university, a changing role, an evolving role, new facilities going up all the time, a large student body, and questions about efficiency and how the different campuses of the university fit together. And I'm sure you're going to have a lot of questions, too. So my guest today, Chancellor Tom Case of the University of Alaska Anchorage. Welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Charles. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I wanted to start out just letting folks know who you are. You were a dean previously at UAA, but in your other life, in your previous career, you were a three-star general commanding in the Air Force here in Anchorage. How did you end up in Anchorage? How did you make that choice?
Well, that's a really good question. I grew up in Eastern Oregon and then developed a love of flying early in life. Was very fortunate to get an appointment to the Air Force Academy. That began what turned out to be a 33-year career of active duty with the Air Force. Got to fly a lot, which was my passion, fighter assignments for the most part. And two of those assignments were here in Alaska. So I was very, very happy to come up to be the commander of the 3rd Wing at Elmendorf. Did that for 2 years. Left Alaska for some other assignments. Then, tragically, when Dave McLeod, who was the Alaska Command 11th Air Force commander, was killed in a private aircraft accident, I was called back to replace him as the ALCOM commander. So that gave me my introduction to Alaska, and it not only met but exceeded my expectations, fell in love with the place, and there was no doubt in my mind this was where I wanted to come back to at the end of active duty.
I think we can all identify with that. But what brought you into the education field? I mean, what was there something in particular that made you make that particular leap?
Well, there were several things. One, education opened the doors of opportunity that I never would have had. And the military and the Air Force, in my case, does a very good job of providing educational opportunities at the right phase points through your career to get the kind of education you need at that time. So I benefited tremendously from that. I also had the opportunity to be on the faculty of the National Defense University's National War College. Did that for 2 years. Really enjoyed the teaching experience there. Throughout my Air Force assignments, where I could and the situation permitted, I was an adjunct instructor for various institutions, off duty, off time, and enjoyed that a lot. And it's funny how things work out in life. When I decided to come back to Alaska after active duty, Lee Gorsuch was the chancellor, and he asked me, because they had just had a fail search for the dean of the College of Business and Public Policy, if I would, upon returning to Alaska, step into that role on an interim basis. And it sounded like a very good opportunity for me and something that needed doing. And it turned out that I really enjoyed the experience, learned a lot, and after a couple of years as interim, became the permanent dean. So that's kind of how I got back into higher education.
So it's interesting in that one sort of assumes that a professor, a PhD, is going to be the head of the university, and we now have our president Gamble is not a PhD, and the three chancellors, as I understand it, are all. Don't necessarily have terminal degrees. Brian Rogers in Fairbanks, and I guess I can't.
John Pugh.
John Pugh at the University of Alaska Southeast. Is that, talk about that for a minute. Is that a concern, an issue, or is it something, a strategy?
Well, there are two tracks, really, that provide qualifications. Certainly, having a PhD and being a longtime career academic higher education person brings a whole set of qualities that are valuable. It's interesting in the business school arena, the highest level accreditation is AACSB accreditation, and that accrediting body has two categories, academically qualified and professionally qualified. So Brian and I fill the professional qualification requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Pugh fills the academic, you know, as well as professional in his case.
I see. Now, I'm sure we're going to want to talk more about that, and I'm sure we're going to have listeners who want to chime in, but I want to make sure to give everyone those phone numbers. If you have a question, comment, anything you want to talk about with UAA, or maybe not everything. We're not going to talk about your problems at registration or your not getting your term paper in late, but anything about policy and the way UAA is operated, Talk of Alaska can be reached at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, you can call toll-free 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. We read those emails on the air, and sometimes that's a great way to get in if you don't have time to call or sit on hold. And I want to call your attention as well to the alaskapublic.org website. You can scroll down to today's show, and you'll find a number of links there with background and information that'd be real useful to learn more about UAA and the choices it's facing right now. You know, on that on your site, Chancellor Case, I was looking at your blog, which is an interesting place to find out about your thoughts and what's happening. And you made a statement that I thought would be an interesting way to start the conversation. You say, for the past few years, the university focused on inputs, adding more programs and serving more students. We're now shifting our focus to outputs, increased graduation rates, research that helps the state with the construction of engineering buildings at UAA and UAF to train engineers Alaska needs. Tell me about this. What you mean about output? So, are we falling short in certain areas that you'd like to see change, and how are you going to go about doing that?
Well, this is a theme that President Gamble introduced, and all of us in the university system are focusing on outputs. And during the last decade or so, which coincided with President Hamilton's time as president, there was a big emphasis on inputs. We wanted to grow the university. We wanted to get more students. We wanted to get more budget to support that and to kind of get on the map as a university system. You know, the three separately accredited universities under the single statewide system and single board of regents, and to really grow. And that was a tremendously successful period of time. The world economy and landscape has changed a lot in the last few years, especially. And so it was a good transition for President Gamble to come in. The timing was exactly right to shift focus towards more outputs. What are we actually accomplishing with the resources that we have? So we're really focused on, first of all, understanding what Alaskans want and need from their university, and then how do we remove roadblocks to success for our students in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the graduation rate, which I guess has been somewhat disappointing, and I also understand we have a problem with freshman retention. In other words, kids who start out and don't stick with it. Are stats not good in that, and how do we deal with that?
Well, we are putting a big emphasis on that through a number of ways. And Alaska is a very exciting state. We have opportunities that other states don't have. We also have some challenges that other mm-hmm. states don't have. We don't have the robust road infrastructure that other states do. We're a very large state. We have a whole number of people who are in rural settings outside the urban area that need to make a transition to that to get access to education, which we want to take to rural settings as mm-hmm. well as in the urban areas. So we are really focusing on looking at what students need to succeed. What does Alaska need, both in terms of high-demand job areas, but also other areas that will enable our students to make the most possible contribution to the state's future and for their own futures, and then assess where they are in that process, their readiness to learn, and then put a big emphasis on advising and counseling so that they have the accurate factual information to make a good choice, and then mm-hmm. and then remove roadblocks so they can get on with it.
So providing more support to students in is one part of it, and the other is
yes.
building incentives so they're getting a lot out of it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I'd like to go to a caller now. Thomas is calling from Anchorage. Thomas, you had a comment or a question?
My concern is for rural native students, and I understand you have some programs to help them get up to speed and such like that. I'd like to hear more about that to encourage our young native people to utilize the university.
Well, you're exactly right, Thomas. That is a big emphasis area for us. We have a number of programs. One of them that is well recognized for excellence is our Alaska Native Science and Engineering program, our ANSEP. And that's been a well-established program to reach into high schools in rural areas, provide summer camps here in Anchorage at an early age to provide incentives for Alaska Native and other rural students to take the math and science courses and succeed in them that are required for an engineering degree, and then transition into engineering and other sciences. And that's one. We have a series of organizations on campus whose role and mission is to provide a safe, comfortable, nurturing place for our Alaska Native students and other minorities as well, so that they can feel welcomed and put in a position where they can really have a chance to succeed well.
Mm-hmm. And there's funding available, I believe, so that somebody who thinks that they can't afford the university, there's ways around that, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. There are a whole series of scholarships that are available, and we put a big emphasis on advising and counseling, not only in the academic arena, but in the financial support arena, to make sure that students that we can reach, and we're finding new ways all the time to reach students, know what scholarships are available. We also have a tremendous support of people who give to the university to enable scholarships that open doors of opportunities for students who might not otherwise be reached.
And how does let me just ask a follow-up with you, Thomas. Just wanted to ask the chancellor, how does a sort of a typical listener who's thinking about going to UAA, where do they access that information about scholarships and maybe remedial opportunities?
Well, the registrar's office is a good place to check first. Our website has a wealth of information on it that can navigate you to the right place. But really, you can call about anywhere in the university and ask about that, and you'll be put in touch with the right people.
Okay. Thomas, did you have any more on that?
Just I wish a lot of success.
All right. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you, Thomas.
The university has an unusual or a different role, partly because there was a merger that took place years ago between the Anchorage Community College and the University of Alaska Anchorage. Most cities our size would have a separate community college that has kind of a different role in terms of two-year programs, which could be high school kids who didn't figure out what they wanted to do and need a little bit of a step forward academically, or folks who are looking for a job credentials, a certificate of some kind. How does that work within does the community college still exist as a separate entity within the university, or how do you manage those two missions, the four-year and the two-year mission?
Well, that's a really interesting topic, Charles, and other states have come to other solutions to it. But in Alaska, we have integrated the educational opportunity all the way from occupational endorsements right up through the PhD level. And so the community college aspect is woven into the fabric of that whole system. For example, on the Anchorage campus, we have the community and technical college. But we also have four community campuses that are community colleges as well. They provide primarily up to two-year degrees, but in some cases have four-year degrees available at the community college.
So in Homer and Valdez and
Well, we've Matsu. got the Matsu College, Kodiak College, Kenai Peninsula College, which includes the branch in Homer and in Seward.
Okay, sure.
And then the Prince William Sound College in Valdez.
Got you. Okay.
Which has a branch in Cordova and other places.
So how do you, when you're thinking about allocating resources or emphasis, how do those two different missions fit together? Is there a competition there, or how do you see that?
No, working? it's all integrated into our mission. I mean, we are as dedicated across the board. One is not favored over the other, and they're very well mashed into a single, you know, a single entity. Really, each has their own circumstances in their setting, their own interests, their own needs. And we have a budgeting process that that allocates to those needs.
I see. In terms of the growth that's taken place, there's been a pretty rapid growth in the student body and certainly also in the facilities. Has that, it seems from an outside perspective that UAA has been evolving into more of a traditional state university and more sort of school spirit, more emphasis on sort of alumni and becoming... changing the role a little bit from what we would have thought of previously as purely a commuter school. Now you've got more dormitories. Do you see that? Is that a direction or an evolution that's happening?
Very much so. And part of it is we have an increased capacity in residence. Right now we have just under 1,000, I think it's 956 beds on campus, all the way from residence halls to townhouses to apartments on campus that provide a more robust, in terms of numbers, a resident life program. But resident life also draws in commuter students as well, quite a lot. Interestingly, our 18 to 24-year-old group is now a little over 45% of our total UAA population. So we are moving towards a more traditional campus profile in terms of age groups. But we still put high emphasis on students of all ages and backgrounds.
Rather than the older adults who would have been a larger cohort before,
I see.
I want to give the numbers out in case there are listeners who want to join our conversation. The show is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Chancellor Tom Case of the University of Alaska Anchorage. And the way to get in on the conversation is to call 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. The email here is hometown@alaskapublic.org. There have been a number of, there have been a couple of interesting studies that have looked at the university in the last few years. I think it was about 2008 that the McTaggart Report came out, which was a kind of a management study in terms of how is the university functioning and how could it be more efficient. And then the Fisher Report came out about a year ago looking at some academic and broad-scale policy issues. Listeners can find both of those linked from alaskapublic.org. Both reports kind of dinged the university a little bit on excessive maybe overhead or more administration or a bit top-heavy, maybe overly hierarchical. And I think most of that focused on UA statewide, which is based on Fairbanks. Are you using those reports in make changes you might be looking at making?
Well, very much so. The Fisher Report did an excellent service in highlighting the numbers and the history and kind of the heritage of how we got to our university system and compared some national standards to some of the categories for us. So that really caused us all to take a closer look probably at ways that we could begin to make improvements. And then Terry McTaggart report also provided a roadmap, which is the basis now of a strategic direction process that President Gamble has led with the Board of Regents. Support to take a really good look at what the state needs from its university. So there, over the course of this year, a whole series of listening sessions around the entire state to ask fundamental questions about what can the university do best, how can we go about doing it best. And there are some parts of that that we're rolling out for comment that we think are right, but we want to be sure. And that gets around having the right balance of staff to faculty to, you know, the overhead issue. But people also are aware and need to be aware that there's a lot that goes on in a university that's enterprise level that can cause the staff to faculty ratio look like it's staff top heavy. There's trimming that we are doing and need to do, but when you look at resident life, the facilities portion, which is a big job, there are some overhead things that just are required for a university to be successful. So mm-hmm. we're mindful of that. But the big focus on the strategic direction is to remove barriers to student success, and that comes with a big re-emphasis on effective advising, counseling, and assessment.
I see. Let me go to another call, which sounds like it's right on topic. Nathan is calling from Anchorage about the Anchorage-Fairbanks relationship. Nathan?
Yes, I was curious if the chancellor could speak to the issue of why is it that the seat of power for the university system is located in Fairbanks, at the Fairbanks campus, especially given, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's my general understanding that we have far more students who come through the system here in Anchorage. And I'm not saying that Fairbanks shouldn't have a strong and you know, really good campus, and I believe they do. But I was always kind of surprised as a student myself, and now as not a student, but who just, you know, kind of keeps in touch with what's going on in the system, why Fairbanks is the seat of power, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a history there that makes sense. When you look at the early years in the early 1900s, Fairbanks was the population center of Alaska. The School of Mines established at Fairbanks and then incrementally grew to gain the designation as a Carnegie One institution, which is the kind of the flagship research university for the state, came at a much earlier time. Since then, demographics have changed. Anchorage has grown tremendously. We support more than two-thirds of all the students in the system through the UAA institutions. We are increasingly involved in research, and we are taking advantage of the natural advantages that the Anchorage-based system provides. But it's important that we continue to work very closely with University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Southeast, because each of us bring something to the state capability. A good example is engineering, where we are advocating very strongly for continued growth in engineering programs, both on the Fairbanks campus and here, because there's a state need for engineers that the two of us need to join together to produce. That's one example.
Mm-hmm.
But we are working closely together.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. I was going to follow up on that, and there's this issue that has come up it seems like forever, but of this competitive issue and mm-hmm. fear on the Fairbanks community's part that Anchorage is getting too big, is taking away too many resources. Folks like our caller thinking, well, why shouldn't we have the main university here since we're the biggest campus with the most students? And then periodically there'll be a flashpoint about a facility that's being built in one community or another and competition. Obviously, you don't want to be involved in conflict with the other campus, but the Fisher Report talks about some things that maybe should be in Anchorage. We don't give PhDs in Anchorage. We don't have some graduate programs that they have at UAF. It seems a little artificial that's the case. And the Fisher document talks about maybe having some PhD programs here, having a law school if we start one be located here. What are your thoughts on that? Is that something you'd like to see? And would that create another conflict with Fairbanks?
Well, to the competition issue, you know, Brian Rogers and I joke a lot. You know, our main area of competition is for the Governor's Cup in hockey, and that's a very mm-hmm. important competition that we maintain robustly. But times are changing, and UA is not being held back from PhD programs, particularly in the professional PhDs. Right now, we are working very hard on the final aspects of approval for a joint PhD with UAF in clinical psychology. Community clinical psychology. The professional PhDs in nursing and other areas lend themselves to our environment here as the population center and transportation and business hub of the state. We have been given at UAA the statewide lead in healthcare education, so the College of Health has just begun its operation, and the new health science building supports that. We have in the long-term planning the phase two of Health Sciences Building, which through the WAMI cooperative program, five-state cooperative program, will give us a big boost in medical education.
Mm-hmm.
So we're increasingly kind of earning our way into more PhD-related work.
So is it looking for gaps and filling those? Obviously, you're probably not going to go into Arctic science or Arctic biology or some of those areas where UAF is super strong, but looking for areas where there's a need and so that you're not in competition?
Absolutely, and that's our biggest focus, is to look at those areas that can provide the most benefit for the state.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need to needlessly duplicate programs that UAF is involved in and are there strong points for a lot of reasons. However, there is room for us to be doing the same things in certain areas where the capacity calls for it. And we have certain specialties of faculty and others that support that. So it's a natural progression.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee a law school at UAA?
We have a very good partnership with Seattle University in the law program and very strong summer programs that they bring here. And to a large degree, that's meeting many needs in the law school. It's a matter of priorities, and you look at resources and assets and what it takes to do something well. We don't want to start down the path of a new law school. A school of architecture has been mentioned, a full-up medical school, you know, other things mm-hmm. that we aspire to someday. But you can't do all at once, and you need to be ready to do it well when you do. So someday in our future, it would not surprise me if we have those things, but probably not in the next 2 years.
Right. And there's a recurrent issue with the schools of education. Each of the three campuses has a school of education producing teachers. There's been criticism that they're not coordinated, that they do compete with one another. I know some Anchorage teachers study at Fairbanks for whatever reason through correspondence. Mm-hmm. Is that something that should be merged, or could it be coordinated better? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, we are on all three campuses working at coordinating them better. And we are now in a search process for a dean of our College of Education here. It's important that we continue to work that issue, because you're right, teachers are vitally important for the future of the state. But that's one of those things that, to me, it wouldn't make sense to only do at one campus,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the interest of consolidation and efficiency, because there are people who need to go through the education towards that at each of our three locations.
Right, and you want to serve them where
right.
they are.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's go to Anthony. He has a question about our Anchorage campus. Anthony?
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much. I'm just joining the show, so that there may have been a question along these lines already. I apologize if it's repetitive. One of the factors that can contribute to the quality of a four-year university is a strong collaborative Greek system. How do you see a stronger Greek system playing a role in the future of UAA?
Well, I think there's growth opportunities in that. We do have some Greek organizations now that are working very well.
Fraternities and sororities,
yes,
who aren't even on the terminology, right.
And that's not something we can dictate. It kind of has to evolve, and it is evolving through interest and with good support, and I do see that as a growing role. And that gets to the earlier question about our role as a commuter campus compared to a resident campus. And we are making great strides towards a bigger footprint as a resident campus with resident life. And just like with our athletic programs, which are growing and very important part, the fraternities and sororities are growing as well as we become more resident-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, what particularly brings that interest for you? Is that something you'd like to see happening?
I'm part of a group of members of the Kappa Sigma fraternity that are offering some support to the chapter that's at UAA. And one of the challenges that they've had is, given the unique configuration of the campus and the challenges with available real estate and neighborhoods for what you would normally see on a Greek row or a Greek environment, there's probably a higher need to have on-campus housing that would help facilitate an area for fraternities and or sororities. So we're hoping that there might be something along those lines in the future that could help foster that environment a little stronger, again, given the unique environment of the real estate and the housing outside of campus.
Is that something that's in the works or that has been thought about in terms of a planning?
Well, it is, and that's a great point, Anthony. We do need more space. We are space limited. That's why we're growing. We're working very closely with Alaska Pacific University, too, to share some of those opportunities. You know, we share the consortium library, and we're working together a lot to provide opportunities for students, and part of that space. But we are trying to build a campus infrastructure to meet those needs.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Anthony. Good.
Thank you very much.
Good question. So it's been. We're going to take a break here in just a moment. I'm talking with UAA Chancellor Tom Case, and you can get on board with your own questions. I'll give out those phone numbers as soon as we take the break. I also need to mention that UAA is a nonprofit contributor to KSKA programming. My name is Charles Wolforth. This is Hometown Alaska. We'll be back shortly.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and my guest today is UAA Chancellor Tom Case. We're talking all things about the University of Alaska Anchorage, and we're open for your questions, comments, anything you want to talk to the Chancellor about. The number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. I wanted to pick up something that the last caller was talking about. Because of the location of the university right in the center of the city with this large area of land, there's a lot of community planning issues that surround UAA. One of the biggest has been the extension of Bregaw Road or connection with Elmore on the far side. Some folks look at the campus and say, wow, that's a big barrier in the middle of town for people wanting going north and south. Others look at it and say, wow, that's a treasure to have that kind of open land in the middle of a city, and that, you know, campuses elsewhere in the country are trying to get rid of cars. Why would we want more in there? Have you taken a policy position on whether you want to see a road go through, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a very important issue, and there are a number of traffic studies underway now. It's the context is important too, because the UMed district is one of the most rapidly growing high density population workplaces in the state. But it has a serene feel to it with the beautiful views with the mountains in the background, mm-hmm. and the vegetation, the trees, and you know, it's
two lakes. How many campuses lakes on?
Lakes,
yeah.
And trails and pathways, and so we're putting a big emphasis on lighting pathways and making safe pedestrian opportunities for people who use the trails, and our students certainly do mm-hmm. as well. And the access to Providence High School for timely
Hospital.
Emergency access, mm-hmm. Providence Hospital, and Alaska, the Native mm-hmm. Hospital as well, that complex, mm-hmm. is an important part too. And so the traffic studies are in progress now. At some point, whether you call it a Bregaw extension or a northern access route option, there are about five different potential options that prior traffic studies have laid out will probably need to be done. You know, when that is, I think we're all still debating and how we go about it. One thing that none of us who talk about it a lot want to see is a big four-lane thoroughfare, high-speed thoroughfare, dividing the you know, the campus and that. So there are ways to design that are friendly to the environment, to the setting, and yet meet the traffic needs.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, that will happen.
So the objective would be to let vehicles into the campus UMed area from the north, but not to encourage them to go through the campus and connect onto Elmore. Is that accurate?
Probably. The trade-off is with high-speed access in the context of the entire municipality road network versus access that's a little more controlled and appropriate to a campus setting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an engineering challenge, and there are ways to do that. I mean, in my past experience on Elmendorf Air Force Base, we did some engineering things that provided overpass for the railroad that you really don't notice is there,
mm-hmm.
because it was designed well. And there are techniques other campuses have used as well. So we're looking at all that.
And one land use issue that affects UAA that is, as you transition to more of a residential campus, if you look at the University of Washington, Seattle, or the University of Oregon in Eugene, there's usually a little commercial district associated with it with small restaurants and places students would want to go. We don't really have that here. Is that something that the university can have a role in creating, or just have to hope it comes about, or how does that work?
Well, it is a topic of discussion in our master planning and longer-term planning process. We can't create that because those would be private businesses. So it's not a simple solution or one that's readily apparent, but it is a need. We, mm-hmm. we definitely do need to have that.
Now I'd like to go to Barbara, who has a question or comment about humanities at UAA. Barbara?
Yes, most of the discussion so far has been about some rather technical things and engineering site location for sororities and fraternities. But if I were a student contemplating going into the humanities field, would UAA be a good place for me to get the kind of education that I would need to have to go on elsewhere, perhaps for a PhD?
Barbara, I think that's an excellent question, and I can say yes, it would be a good place. We have some excellent humanities program. For example, our debate team is ranked 11th in the world, second in the nation. They're just outstanding. We have a very active music program. Our theater and dance program is strong. Our philosophy department, our languages and departments are very strong. So we do have a strong posture in the humanities. It may not get as much attention publicly, but it's very strong.
What is being done about funding faculty in those departments? Is it are they growing, or is it pretty static, or what's happening?
It is something we aspire to grow. But my sense is that it's growing at about the same rate that other things are.
All right. Thank you, Barbara. I'd now like to go to Pat, who had a question about UAF related to UAA. Pat?
Yeah, hi. I used to drive city bus. One of the complaints I had from a lot of students that were coming from UAF is that when they transferred down to UAA, they weren't accepted all the credits. And to me, I've gone to a lot of colleges. I just can't imagine anybody not being able to accept credits in their own university system. Is that still a problem? I don't know if it is or not anymore.
Well, it's a huge topic of conversation and attention and focus, and we are doing everything we can to facilitate the transfer of credits, not only within the UA system, but nationally into our system. But there are...
Why is that an issue?
Well, it's...
Well, I understand that, but I can't believe if I'm taking a class, no matter what the class is, at, let's say, UAF or Southeast, it's all in the same university center. How could it not be accepted? I just can't imagine that.
Yeah, let's get the chancellor's view on that.
Yeah, well, it does seem that way. But when you go down a couple layers, there are differences in some programs' accreditation that require other things in the curriculum that aren't in the credit that's trying to be trying to transfer. And we have a successful transfer rate, but there is a percentage of courses that don't transfer. Another problem that we're working on is some courses are called the same thing, but they're not the same courses. You know, it may be an English 201 that's structured entirely differently at the campuses, but we have an active effort by our allied faculty, that statewide cooperative group of our faculty members from all three campuses. They're looking to help transferability of credit.
Thanks, Pat. That was a really good question. I had no idea that was a problem. Now I'd like to go to Rich, who has something to say about business partnerships. Rich?
Yes, Chancellor, you and the whole team are doing such a great job, and I understand there are some initiatives in the area of working with the business and government sector to provide career paths through the university's curriculum and help students to prepare themselves, and working with the community, town and gown connections, if you will. Can you speak to that?
Well, thank you, Richard. We really are putting a high emphasis on that. And the institution for the last few years has been working very hard on pathway planning so that you can lay out a course. And it goes back to the advising and counseling I talked to earlier with another caller, is that we're really focusing on advising and counseling and to get a pathway designed for each student. In addition to that, we are putting a high emphasis on entrepreneurship support for innovative ways to support students who want to get the experience to start entrepreneurial efforts.
Rich?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. Let's go. We're talking with UAA Chancellor Tom Case today. And Jed had something to say. We were talking earlier about law school. And Jed, did you have a comment on that?
I do. I'm actually a senior. I'll be graduating this May from UAA. And I've been interested in attending law school, and I keep hearing about how there's a cooperation with Seattle University, but I have yet to be able to communicate with someone on campus that can point me in the right direction. It seems like there's a lot of programs at UAA that exist, but they aren't intuitive. Like it's not easy for a student to maneuver through and find these programs.
Interesting.
Well, thank you, Judd. Why don't you call me after the program and I can get you in touch with the right people. But you're exactly right. We're really working on making it easier and more effective to navigate through the system to get to the right party to help. But the law school connection is one. You know, I'd love to have a law school here, and someday we probably will.
Jed, since you're a UAA senior, it's a great opportunity for me to ask a question of like, how do you feel about your education at UAA? Are you a satisfied customer? And what were the strongest points and what were the weakest points?
I am a satisfied customer. I've researched some other institutions, and I'm a history major. I'm an undergraduate student, and I found that in researching other institutions, UAA seems to have a higher rate of professors that are PhDs as opposed to master's level professors teaching courses. And it seems like I feel like I've gotten a good quality education. My wife went to an undergraduate, did her undergraduate degree at Gonzaga, and she did her master's at UAA. And she concurs that the UAA experience has been pretty good.
Great. Well, that's great to hear. Thanks very much for calling. I'd like to now go to John, who's calling from Palmer. John, you still with us?
Sure.
Great. Go right ahead.
In the Great Depression of the late 1980s, the university just eviscerated the agricultural research business, and I'd like to know if they're going to resurrect it, what they're doing about it, and if you can talk about the relationship with the experiment farm and the university in Fairbanks and Anchorage.
Well, we are looking closely at that, and you're right, John. It has been a difficult time for that. And UAF, as you know, runs a lot of the agricultural programs there in the Palmer area, next to the Matsu College, and that's kind of a shared endeavor. That whole area is under review right now, and We would like to keep it robust and growing, but we're just going to have to see what the business case and our means are to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, John, thanks for your call. We're talking today on Hometown Alaska with UAA Chancellor Tom Case. The phone number, if you want to get in here on the last quarter of the show, is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And by email, hometown@alaskapublic.org. Going back to the previous caller, Jed, who is a senior and gave you a great vote of confidence, I thought, in the quality of education he'd received. I hear that a lot. My dad has recently received a master's degree from UAA. He's, of course, retired and has lots of other degrees, and he certainly goes on about the high quality of instruction and the ability of the professors to work with very bright students as well as struggling students. But I'm not sure that that reputation has really spread very far from UAA. And in fact, the official report, which came out last year, talks about UAA having maybe a below par reputation outside. In terms of a national reputation, we're really not on the radar screen. Is that is that an important goal for us, or should we just sort of go ahead and say, well, we're serving Alaska students, and who cares what they think outside? What's your thought on that?
Well, we definitely need to get credit for all the good things that are going on, because it is a wonderful university, and we have some real advantages here that our students recognize more times than not. I mean, we have smaller class sizes. We have more direct access to highly qualified PhD professors and other faculty members who are just very good in their field and interact directly with students. We have more opportunity on our campus than many, many universities outside the state who have very high reputations, mm-hmm. but just don't have that opportunity.
And where you might be taking your classes from teaching assistants, so who are graduate students, which is not going to happen here primarily.
Exactly, yeah. So our reputation, I think, is increasing. We need to continue to tell that story and to advertise. We do get international students and others from outside Alaska coming to UAA, and that word spreads, but we need mm-hmm. to continue telling the story.
Well, one of the points that is made in the Fisher Report is that we should emphasize a couple of departments and really get the best people in the world and really push those so that we have a flagship departments that become famous elsewhere. And I don't know, I suppose that means that if you're emphasizing one place, you may be shortchanging somewhere else. Is that a strategy that you think is the right way to go?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about that, and they call that the halo effect, you know, to pick a program that you can put a halo on and just make it really nationally notable. We are doing that with a number of programs. You know, the ANSEP engineering program is a tremendously successful program with a growing national reputation. I mentioned our debate team.
That's the native engineering program,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. I mentioned our debate team. I mean, there are other areas that we are doing nationally notable work on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are heading in that direction.
Well, I think that this whole story of the debating team is one that is extraordinary. And when you look at those rankings worldwide that we've all the universities that UAA has beat, that is a matter of great pride for everyone in Anchorage, I think. I'd like now to go to Bruce in Anchorage, calling about the 1% for Art program. Bruce?
Yeah, hi, Charles. Thanks. As a UAA alum, I was pretty disconcerted when former President Hamilton sought and was able to acquire an exemption from the 1% for Art program that the state mandates for, you know, state-funded facilities and so on. Part of the reason for that is just that Alaska is, just because of its nature as such a mysterious and wonderful place, attracts a lot of creative people. But artists, once they get here, have a real struggle trying to actually survive and build businesses around their chosen, you know, profession. And it really, really was a huge blow when UAA or the UA system created an option to opt out of that. One of the few ways, you know, avenues for artists to to really make some actual money once in a while.
Yeah, and if folks don't know that, the 1% for Art program is a program that says if you're going to put up a new structure, you allocate 1% of the cost of the structure towards public art, and we're certainly building a lot of new buildings here on the campus. Mm-hmm. Are we, for example, there's the new sports facilities going in. Are you using the 1% for those, or are you opting out of it?
Well, we're not using the formal 1%. Program, as the caller said, but it's important to me, and I'd be the last one to argue that that isn't very, very important for us to capture the art and the mystique and the excitement of Alaska through art, because it also advances the arts as well. But the point about the opportunity for making money for artists is important too to continue to grow that community. So,
but why opt out of it then? What's the?
Well, that was a statewide decision some years back, and I'm not as familiar with the history of that as I need to get.
Okay, Bruce.
Well, is there any sort of a policy direction that you see emerging about the upcoming facilities construction? I mean, will you be giving project managers sort of the encouragement to go ahead and build in art-related design elements and put out competitions and so on through the State Arts Council and so on?
Yes, that is an emphasis area for all of our new facilities, and a lot of attention is paid to it. So it is important. We are paying attention to it.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce. We're going to move on. We've got so many callers. Next is Aaron from Anchorage, who has a question or a comment about students with disabilities. Aaron?
Hi, Charles. Hey, I'd like to know what services the university offers for students with disabilities, namely those disabilities that are more hidden, like students with Asperger syndrome or issues like that. I'm just curious in how UAA measures up with other universities.
I think we do pretty well. We have a very active disability services section. It's a theme through all of our residents' life and student-centered service organizations. And I don't have the data in front of me how we compare nationally, but I can tell you it is a high emphasis item, and we do a lot in that area.
Okay. Well, so if a student was going to apply, then he or she should definitely, you know, be listing that, and then the university could help them link up with the services they might need then?
Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Next, we're going to go to Jay in Wasilla. Jay, something about the Pebble Mine?
Yes, I was wondering how much the chancellor is getting paid for his ads with the Pebble Partnership.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, the ads that he's making for the Pebble Mine and Pro Pebble Mine.
I think you're confusing me with someone else. I'm not doing that.
All right. Okay. Sounds like that might be a point of confusion.
No, it could be.
Pardon me? All right, we're going to go to Charlie, who is calling from Anchorage. And Charlie's comment is about, I guess, the administrative interface for students. Charlie?
Yeah, just a little bit of background. I have a bachelor's from a Pac-10 school I got in the 80s. Did my post-bac work in the Cal State system in the 90s and have retired out of 20 years as an educator. And I'm going back to school for an associate's degree. And I'm wondering if the university is considering going back to kind of a more departmentalized interface for students coming in than what's provided by the One Stop at the University Center. I found it, of the institutions I've gone to, I found this to be the most difficult as far as admissions and getting financial aid questions. And it seems to me that's because it's a one-size-fits-all model where in the past, if you want something to go through admissions, you go to admissions, where here you go to the One Stop and see one person who's supposed to be able to answer all of the questions. So that's my question for the chancellor. And then just with that note, I've had wonderful experiences here so far with the actual instruction and the professors in program.
Okay, so let me just ask you to clarify something, Charlie. When you say you go to the One Stop, is the problem that the person doesn't necessarily know the answers to the questions, or the questions might be too detailed, or what is the drawback you see in that you've run into?
Both with trying to get myself admitted and also with financial aid questions, I've had multiple different answers from multiple people there. It seems like each time I go to talk with them about whatever question I have, I talk to somebody different, and have not had a particularly good experience with that aspect of this university.
All right. Essentially a customer service question.
Well, it is, yeah. Charlie, and I would be the first to tell you that's a critically important area that we are working on. I go back some years with UAA. My daughter was a graduate of UAA. I have seen improvements there, and it's a big focus area for us. I acknowledge we're not there yet, but we are working hard on it. I appreciate the input.
Do you have a way of measuring your sort of customer service success or some way of seeing if the students are really getting the information they need?
We do. We have a series of metrics, and one of the ideas was the one-stop place that you could get referred to the very best place for your specific question or interest. That's, you know, we're still working on that.
All right. All right, Charlie, does that answer your question? Do you have anything else to add?
No, thank you for your answer.
All right, thanks very much for calling. So as you've stepped into some pretty big shoes here in terms of Fran Ulmer, who's quite a popular chancellor. How have you found coming into this job new? You haven't been there that long. It must be a bit of a challenge to get on top of so many issues at once.
Well, it's a big enterprise, no doubt, but I really feel like I'm coming home because having had almost 6 years in the university before, I have a real heart for the mission, great people, and you're right, it's a big organization. There is a lot to get your arms around, but I'm just having a delightful time with it.
Mm-hmm. How do you find interacting with Fairbanks, with the chancellor before Chancellor Ulmer working with President Hamilton? It burst out into the public that there was apparently some real conflict there. And it does seem like, you're in charge of this university. Do you have to be reporting back to Fairbanks, or how does that work?
Well, the context is we have a statewide system, single board of regents, three independently accredited universities who work together for the good of Alaska. Now, are there competition areas? Well, there sure are. And I mentioned hockey earlier. That's certainly one of them. And there are other areas, too. But we have a mechanism to work together effectively. And all three of the chancellors work very closely together. In fact, we joke about the three amigos visit to Juneau. And we do go together as a group to Juneau to talk to legislators and talk about the overall statewide enterprise and the way that we work together. And then the second half of that conversation for each of us are things on our individual campus areas that are priorities for us. So the competition is healthy, particularly when it's in athletics. So we're doing all right.
But the communications are open.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank my guest, Chancellor Tom Case. The hour went quickly. He took an extraordinary range of questions and seems to be pretty well up on what he's doing at UAA. My name is Charles Wolforth. I've been your host. Kristen Spack has been engineering for us and doing a wonderful job with that, and also handling the website, which has been she's so good at. Pat Yak is the Vice President of News and Public Affairs and sort of keeps us going. Stick with us next week for another edition of Hometown Alaska, Wednesday at 2, repeating at 7, here on KSKA Anchorage.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.